one day I'm going to get with all this modern technology and get my pictures put on the computer so they can go on the screen. In the meantime, I have brought a book along, page 199, and you can turn over and have a look, and it'll tell you a little bit about Mount Tabor. So I'll start by giving it to Jason, and I'll pass it around so people can have a look. There is a discussion amongst scholars over which mountain the story refers to. But traditionally, it is Mount Tabor, and to be honest, I go along with this idea. I'm sorry Paul isn't here, because he might have given some input into this as well, but he's probably actually there at the moment, yes. First reason for saying this, it is not too far. It's in the Galilee region. It's not too far from Capernaum. It's not a long walk. I think today's people, unless they've done the North Downs Challenge, might disagree, but it really wasn't that far. It's also not a great climb. It's only about 1,000 feet, although when you look at the pictures, it looks quite a lot. The other candidate for the honour of being the mountain is Mount Hermon, and that's about 9,000 feet and quite a long way away. So I do reject that one. I will say this, though, that when we went, although it was only 1,000 feet high, we were very glad of a taxi ride up to the top. You can't go up in a coach. The road is too windy, too narrow, so your coach drops you at the bottom of the car park and you go up in a taxi. I wish the taxi drivers learnt to drive, though, don't you think, Jean? They were not good. There we go. If it was Mount Tabor, then it has quite a place in both New Testament and Old Testament history. You'll find it mentioned in the book of Deuteronomy. And then you'll also find, if you go to Judges, it's chapter 4 actually, if you want to read it, but it's a bit gory. You'll find out that it was from Tabor that Deborah sent Barak down to fight with the Canaanites below in the valley. That's when their chariots all got stuck in the mud. Right, so I think Tabor is the right mountain for this, is what I'm going to say. The question then is, what happened up there? Well, they, that is the sort of inner cabinet of disciples of Jesus, had a vision. They saw Moses and Elijah walking with Jesus at the top of the mountain. And quite bluntly, I think the disciples were both a little bit scared and a little bit at a loss for what to say or do. And of course, Peter being Peter, made a really crass remark, as we will come to in a moment, but that was Peter, wasn't it? So there we are, we're in the peace of the mountaintop, and we have the vision. Moses, what is Moses doing there? Well, actually, we've got it up there as well, by the way, if you look up. Moses is there to represent the law. And there's Elijah at the other side, and he's there to represent the prophets. Both were highly symbolic. And also, if you think about it, both were privy to having visions of the glory of God. Moses, first of all, on Mount Sinai, and then Elijah on Horeb. And then comes a voice which says, "This is my beloved son." And then suddenly, there's no Moses and no Elijah. This is the really important bit. We do not need either of them after the transfiguration. Moses brought the original law, but Jesus added to it and actually made it simpler. We only have two laws, or only need two laws with Jesus. Love God, love your fellow man. It's very simple. Man with a capital M, you know that, don't you? Yes. These two laws cover everything. And we do not need Elijah anymore. Not with the coming of Jesus, because all the prophecies of the Old Testament are now come true, and the future was the present. It was the here and now. The prophets weren't needed. And if you think about it for a moment, you can see all the logic of this. It was not that the Old Testament is not important, but simply that everything in it had now come to fruition with Jesus. Although the disciples were probably quite confused, the point would not have been lost on them in the long run. I'm sure, though, that at the time, it would not have been clear, and it would only gradually clear, like the mist of the vision cleared on the mountain. However, what was very clear was Jesus' charge to them to keep matters to themselves until after he had risen from the dead. And that caused them quite a lot of worry. Well, what did it mean? What Mark was doing was writing down Peter's stories it gave it to them. And Peter was running the whole thing through, from the transfiguration, coming down the mountain, this talk, right on to where they meet the scribes. Is it surprising that Peter didn't understand all the others? No, because this is the first time that any hint had been given to the forthcoming death of their leader. Now let's see where we go on this. First of all, they'd all follow Jesus. And then, just a day or so earlier, probably, there had been that marvellous revelation to Peter that Jesus was the Messiah. Right, good, we've got that over with. They all know that Jesus is Messiah. Now he's got to get them ready for what's coming. And this is the first time they get any hint that he's actually going to die, let alone rise again. So it is going to come as a bit of a shock to them. And they would only really come to understand everything, in fact, after the resurrection. Then Peter had a go at clarifying another point made by the scribes. Surely Elijah was supposed to come before the Messiah arrived. Was this what we've just seen in the vision? Was that it, Jesus? No. Jesus was being enigmatic again to them. But it wasn't the Elijah of the vision. It was a real flesh and blood Elijah, if you like. There was a man who was going to come to herald the Messiah. But this man was actually an Elijah substitute. We all know who it was. It was John the Baptist. In effect, what Jesus was saying was, this was a sort of myth that Elijah was going to return. It wasn't God who had said so. It was men who had the myth, saying the Messiah won't come till Elijah comes back. And now Jesus is saying, well, if you like, Elijah has come. What it meant by Elijah was there would be a messenger. And that messenger was John. And if we look at the start of Mark's gospel, Mark is always in a hurry, by the way, in this gospel. He starts off the first line saying, this is a gospel about Jesus Christ. Right, let's get to it. Verse 2 in Mark's gospel. It is, as it is written in the prophets, behold, I send my messenger before your face, which will prepare the way for you. And then in verse 3, Mark immediately borrows famous words from the Old Testament. The voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make his path straight. And we only have to wait a couple more verses. We get down to verse 7 and 8, and he emphasizes the point. I'm going to put the word John in, it doesn't make sense otherwise. And John preached, saying, there comes one mightier than I am. The latchet of his shoes I am not worthy to stoop down and unloose. I indeed have baptized you with water, but he shall baptize you with the Holy Ghost. This is the Elijah substitute which people were looking for. They didn't recognize it, but that was it. Elijah has come, in Jesus' words, and he is the Messiah now. You see, Jesus was not too worried about a physical Elijah. It was the spiritual Elijah which was important. In the Transfiguration, he demonstrated that Elijah was not needed, as the prophecies had been fulfilled with his coming. I mean, his task now was to put over to his disciples that he too was to be put to death and would rise again, according to the scriptures. It's tough for us to understand this. It must have been well nigh impossible at the time for the disciples to grasp what was going on. Whatever was to come later, the Transfiguration vision was surely a pivotal point in the gospel stories. It really is important. And it's on the same level, almost, as the revelation to Peter at Banias, or Caesarea Philippi, if you want to call it that, that Jesus was the Messiah. In one sense, the transfiguration actually marks a turning point in Jesus' ministry. From here on in, he's now going to be preparing the disciples for the coming crucifixion and the resurrection. That's why it's so important.